So last night I gave a talk, which is why she's so tired today. I was invited to Karnei Shomron, and somebody had Yartzeit, and they wanted to give me talks. I actually gave all of Sefer Bereishit in an hour and 10 minutes. Right? It was.
With a source sheet or without a source sheet?
Without a source sheet. And no, most people, I think everyone was awake from beginning to end, but we're paying the price now, apparently. So we're going to continue that today, Right. We're going to continue today, even though some of you weren't there. And we're obviously going to start with a whole new book with Sefer Shmot. So what we're going to start is a little bit of a background. And on the one hand, Sefer Shmot is simply the continuation of Sefer Bereishit. To the extent that if this would have been the same book, none of you would have said, hold it a second, this should be a new book. I mean, it's there is a clear flow. But Yikra is very, very different. Vayikra really is different, and Bamidbar is, but for a whole other reason. Dvorim is for another reason as well. But the distinction between Bereishit and Shemot is not that great. Although probably the biggest difference between Bereishit and Shemot is the amount of time that flows within the book, which means Bereishit really is a huge amount of time comparatively. I mean, if you think about the amount of time in Bamidbar, you're down to, I don't know, from the beginning to the end of Bamidbar, how much time is it? Maximum, you're talking probably, how long? Yeah, even less than 40 years. So Sefer Shemot's going to be large in that within the hundreds of years, while Bereishit's going to be within thousands of years, although we sort of slowed down in terms of the time going by, but when we got towards the end of Bereishit, I would say once we get past Avraham even, time has really slowed down significantly. So it's just a continuation. The children went down to Egypt. They're in Egypt. As a matter of fact, there's even a little bit of repetition between the end, and not even the very end, between Parshat Vayigash. You have a whole list of the people that came down. And then again, the list seems to be repeated more or less when we get to the beginning of Shemot. But what I want to do is I want to take a look today, and at some point you're going to think that I'm forcing it, and then at some point later you're going to say, no, that really he really is right. So there's going to be a little couple stages to the class. But what I want to do is I want to take a look at Shemot as a continuation of Sefer Bereishit, and there are certain things which I think are very striking. I'm not starting from the very beginning. I'm starting from the first source. So let's pause there for a second. Is there anything within that phrase, something which reminds us in any kind of way, shape, or form of anything within Sefer Bereishit? So the answer to that should be very obviously yes. Which, right. Which means when I take the very beginning of Bereishit and then I compare it or contrast it to the very beginning of Shemot, so over here I have this command to be fruitful and multiply, and over here I said, wow, you know, or as our kids would say, voila, you know, this is happening. But as I said, let's not look at this as two separate things. Let's look at this as the fulfillment or the manifestation of that bracha which exists in the very beginning. For those of you who completely are unfamiliar with the beginning of Bereishit, so source number two, Vivrelu Kimet Adam, Bitsamo, Bitsalam Kim Bara Oto, Zachar Nekeva Bara Otam. Keep that in mind a second, because I'm going to come right back to that. Vayavarechotam Elokim Vayomalahim, Elokim Peru, Vumalu at the Aretz, Vikiv Shua, Urdu Bedergatayam, Uva Ofa Shemaim Vachol, Chaya Urmes at the Aretz. Now, what's the message there in the beginning of Bereishit? The message is actually twofold, and I don't believe you can look at Pasuk Kaf Chet without looking at Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Yes or no? You can't look at Pasuk Kaf Chet without looking at Kaf Zayin. Now, of course you can tell me, what are you talking about? To be able to procreate is something which every species can do. You don't need a particularly human capabilities to do this, right? The birds and the bees do it. I'm sure there are songs like this, right? But over here, it's striking that the Peru Revu is said within the context. We're endowed with something which we can call Tzelem Elokim, and therefore our commandment of Peruvu is in some way or shape or form of bringing more Tzelu Elokim into the world, which is very, very different from the animal kingdom. Now, over here, I would therefore say it's the distinction to the animal world. Why am I right when I say that? That this is to the distinction of the animal world. Yes? Why am I right when I say that? Because it says it. Peruvu Meluot Haaretz V'Kiv Shur Uredu B'Digat Hayam U'Va'Ofa Shemayim V'Choya Chaya HaRameset Al Haaretz, which means the distinction between animals versus humans is stated clearly. Man is B'Tzel Elokim. Man is told to have children. Man is told that there is this distinction between humanity and between the animal kingdom. The reason why I'm pointing this out is that's exactly what Paro seems to be ignoring. Which means the orientation of Paro towards the Jews is to strip them. Certainly, Tzel Elokim is something which he can't possibly or will not possibly understand. The matter of fact, let's read this in order, and then again, you can't accuse me of forcing it, even though I keep telling you I'm not. Go back to source number one. We started with Peruvu, which now the way that should be very good, right? Tzelem Elokim and so on. But you come Melech Hadash HaMitzrayim Asher Lo Yadat Yosef. Now, why is that significant? Asher Lo Yadat Yosef. So when we read this, how do we normally read this? We read this in terms of the context of the story of the Exodus. This is the beginning of the enslavement. He doesn't know Yosef. It doesn't know Yosef. So therefore, the Jews who perhaps had enjoyed some special status will have lost the status, and now they are slowly going to slip into slavery. That's not what the Chumash is telling us. That's only what the Chumash is telling us when we look at Sefer Shemot in this little context of reading this verse by itself. But what happens when we read this verse exactly as I just now showed you to read the verse, comparing it or contrasting it to the very beginning of Bereishit, where there was a much larger statement over here? I mean, let's try this again. Asher lo yodat Yosef. Yodat Yosef is not the right word. What word should have been used?
Hikir.
Lo hikir, lo zachar, lo. Yada is interesting. As a matter of fact, I would be quite tempted to contrast this something which we find a little bit later, when Moshe and Aaron come in front of Paro. This is in Perek Hey Pasuk Bet. Vayomer Paro, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Kolo L'Shalachit Yisrael, Lo Yadati Et Hashem, V'Gam Et Yisrael Lo Ashaleach. You notice the Lo Yadati Et Hashem, why that's interesting? Okay, let's try a little bit harder. Why should Paro know about Hashem? Because there was one somebody named Yosef, and the person named Yosef said, you know, Elokim is revealing to Paro. Elokim is doing this. Meaning, he keeps talking about God to the extent that Paro finally says, is there a person that has so much of the Spirit of God within him? Which means when it says that he no longer knows Yosef, who else are we now supposed to understand that he no longer is going to remember? And that is God. Which means this verse over here, in the beginning of Perek Aleph, Melech Hadash Asher Lo Yada Et Yosef, is foreshadowing to Perek Hey, the Melech, or the Paro, Asher Lo Yada Et Hashem. Because those things are absolutely together. So now again, Pasuk Tet, Vayomer Elamo, Hine Am Bnei Yisrael Rav Atsum Mimenu. Classic anti-Semite or anti-Semitic, there's so many of them. I think anti-Semites get shocked when they realize how few of us are actually in the world. Yeah, 100%, 100%. That's what I was about to get to, is that part of what Paro, and again, this goes into classic anti-Semitic themes, what he needs to do is to dehumanize the Jews as much as possible, and we're going to see that thing come up again and again, which is why I'm saying that the contrast over here between Tzelem Elokim and Peru Uvu versus, oh, look how numerous the Jews are, and therefore we basically, I mean, look, the Germans talked about an extermination. Right? Not, there's a politics in language, correct? When people talk about euthanasia, they like to call it mercy killing. They don't like to call it compassionate murder, because that doesn't sound as good. Mercy killing. So the politics and the language is very important, which means for the Germans, they're not only going to call us subhumans. When you exterminate, you're actually doing the world a favor. It's not murder. It's not killing. It's solving a problem. And again, if you're familiar with any of the films which they made in terms of dehumanizing us, making us into rodents, animals, things running around, so of course we need to exterminate. That kind of theme that you find by the Germans, you find over here within the language of Paro. You also find it later on in other places in Bamidbar. Yeah. Right. Right. So you have shratim, you have something else. So this dehumanizing, the lack of the Tzelem Elokim, which is there in Bereshit, suddenly is screaming out at you at this verse. This idea of being Rav Atzum Mimenu, where they're going to be so numerous and so on. I mean, you also, again, just to contrast it, I'm not saying it's exactly the same situation. But if you look at source number 4, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon va Levi achartem oti lahavi isheni b'yeshev ha'aretz b'knani v'frizi v'ani mitei mispar v'nesfu alai v'yikuni v'nishmanati ani uveti. It's again the self-perception of Yaakov. We are small number. By the way, this verse is also more important than you realize, but I'm not going to say it yet, but it's more important than you realize, and it does come back into the beginning of Shemot theme, but we'll wait on that. But you know where else this comes up? Later on, I started mentioning about Midbar. When the Meraglim come back, what do the Meraglim say? Right? They are giants and we are like grasshoppers in their eyes. Right? Right? In their eyes. Right? Projection. We are like grasshoppers in their eyes. And what happens when we have Bilam speaking about the Jews? Bilam and Balak and the king of Midian. How does he describe the Jews? They are this big and powerful, sweeping through the desert. So again, it's interesting that the Jewish perception is one that we are small, we are weak, and so on. And the non-Jews look at us and they explode our numbers and our importance and so on, right? I'm saying again today, I think that the average anti-Semite, if you really pointed out how many Jews there were in the world today, I think they'd be shocked out of their minds. How can that possibly be? You know, again, if we control all of Hollywood and we control the banks and we control the newspapers, I mean, there's got to be a lot of us if we're doing all of this controlling. And I think that that's part of what happens, is that we can get completely blown out of proportion. And that's what Paro was doing over here as well. There's a second element to it. One is there's so many of us. And two, when it really comes down to it, we cannot be trusted. The Jews cannot be trusted. We are not patriotic. We are not real citizens. We have dual loyalties. Some other more attractive party comes in and wages war, we will join the other side. So I'm saying the anti-Semitic speech that Paro gives over here, I mean, he should be awarded for this, and anybody who uses this afterwards should have to pay zchut yotzrim to Paro. But obviously this happens many, many times in history. So it's this exaggeration and this lack of trust. And then there's one other element that I'll add in, and this is more on a midrashic level than it's on a pshat level. Ashelo yadat Yosef, there's something wrong about that. Because as we saw, moving through the end of Parshat Vayigash, Yosef made Paro a very, very wealthy man. Yosef collected all of the wealth, at least of Egypt and maybe of the whole Middle East, and gave it to Paro. Lo yadat Yosef, there's just something wrong about that. There's a lack of, what phrase would you use? Hakarat Hatov. Exactly. There's a lack of Hakarat Hatov, which means, what do you mean you don't remember Yosef? Where did you get such a beautiful, you know, palace? Where did you get all this money from? Lo yadat Yosef, there's something wrong about that. I'm saying it on a moral level. So what's interesting about that, again, at least midrashically, and Rashi certainly brings it into it, and you can decide if it's pshat or not. So, you know, in Christianity, I mean, it's a couple of days after Christmas, so. In Christianity, there's this big deal about original sin. In Judaism, there's a very big question, what exactly is original sin? Which means, what exactly was the first, when I say original sin, it's very different in Jewish sources. What was the first sin that took place in the Garden of Eden? So, when you look at Rashi, and you look at the words that Adam uses. What happens? God says to Adam, what happened? So what's the first thing that he says? Whose fault is it? Right, look at Rashi in source number 3. Right? It's the woman's fault. Asher natati imadi. By the way, who's he blaming here? You're right. He's really blaming God. You gave me this woman. This was your soulmate, right? This is your soulmate. I mean, that's actually the problem, is that people think that a soulmate is supposed to be perfect, but no, the soulmate is your perfect mate for you, right? This is the perfect match for you. God makes the shidduch the perfect one for you, and instead of appreciating this and being thankful for this, he is, again, in one sentence, this is great, it's not easy to do, in one sentence you blame God and you blame your wife, right? This is not a clever thing to do. Right? Right? Right. And what?
It wasn't hard.
It wasn't hard. It was easy. Blame. Just like that. Just like that. Look at what Rashi then says. Because Rashi breaks it down to such an interesting level. Kan kafar betova. Here we have kafui tov. He's ungrateful. Which is, it's not that, you know, theologically you blamed God for it and you think God is imperfect. You don't appreciate that God did something for you. Which is so interesting, therefore, that again, we have this real original sin in Bereishit being lack of appreciation for what we have. And then you look at the starting points of Shemot. The very first point is, Asher lo yadat Yosef, and you have kafui tov. How can you not appreciate what Yosef did for your society? Yosef completely transformed Egypt into a world power. Okay, so pause there, and let's continue, and let's move on. Havan nitchak malo. Okay, so that's just a throwaway right now in terms of the word nitchakma. More likely than not, you've not necessarily seen this. In the first pasuk in the Torah, Bereshit bara. So some of the Targumim had a hard time translating Bereshit. So there's the Targum from Eretz Yisrael translates Bereshit bechokhmata, bechokhma. Why? Reshit Chachma Yirat Hashem. So translate, what does it mean, Bereshit? Meaning, it's not just the beginning, it's how creation takes place. Bechochma, with wisdom, God created heaven and earth. So over here, it's also interesting that you have this flip on the Chachma. Again, I'm not saying that in the terms of a Pshat. And Kabbalistically, Chachma is much more. It's Koachma in terms of the Sefirot. Not important. Havanet chakmalo pen yurbe v'yakitra enemichma v'nosaf gam hua al soneinu v'nocham banu v'alam min ha'aretz. As I said, that's the typical anti-Semitic. Jews cannot be trusted. V'yasimu alav sarei misim l'man anato b'sivlatam. So there is the introduction of taxes. I don't recall, are taxes ever mentioned beforehand in the Torah? Right here we have taxes. Leman anoto, in order to torture, in order to create suffering, sivlatam. Vayiven ori miskano leparo et pitom bet Ramses, and they built these cities for Paro. V'kaasher yanu oto ken yirbe v'chein yifrot. The more they abused them and tortured them, the more that they continued to grow. V'yakutsu. Mipnei b'nei Yisrael. So here you get to this level of disgust. And as I said, you find the same elements later on by the later anti-Semite in the beginning of Parshat Balak. You find the same phrases being used over there. V'ya'avidu Mitzrayim b'nei Yisrael b'farach, and they enslave them, you know, with hard work. V'yamru et chayim b'avodah kasha b'chomer l'venim u'v'chol avodah b'sadeh et kol avodatam asher abdu b'hem b'farach. Now, as I said, the way we normally read this is that all this is part of a new story. We're not familiar with this story. This is a story of slavery, of enslavement, of belittling others, of looking at others as being subhuman, of not trusting others, of seeing them as being this other foreign element within us. But very, very subtly, there are so many words that the trick over here is I bold them for you, so I make it easier. But there are so many words along the way which we should have been familiar with because they really did make an appearance at some earlier stage. So let's start thinking about where we find some of those some of those phrases. First of all, let's skip to source number 7. Ve'yikach Hashem Elokim et Adam ve'yinichehu began edim la'ovda u'lashomra. So avodah by itself is not something to be embarrassed about. I mean, Judaism never saw work as something which is bad. Work is something which is good. I gave a shiur on Shabbat afternoon where one of the things that it says there are four, the Gemara in Brachot and Daf Lamed Bet says there are four things that need chizuk. This is on the topic of chazak v'nit chazek. There are four things that need chizuk. One of the things there, the Gemara says, is derech eretz. What's derech eretz? So you think good midot needs chizuk, and it certainly does, certainly here. But derech eretz in the Gemara means having a job. Rashi therefore clearly says you're going to be a sabal, be a good sabal. You're going to work in a kitchen. You'll work well in a kitchen. And it goes on and on. All kinds of different jobs. It needs chizuk. It needs to do it well, and you give it your all, and so on and so forth. La'ovda u'lashomra. There's nothing to be embarrassed. La'ovda u'lashomra. The initial role of man in the Garden of Eden had two sides to it. La'ovda u'lashomra. You can all decide what la'ovda u'lashomra means, or you can look at the various commentaries. But what's the difference between la'ovda u'lashomra versus what we find over here? Because over here, the work is in order to abuse. Over here, the work is in order to subjugate. It's in order to try to have to squash the Tzelem Elokim. I have no better way of saying it, but it's in order to squash the Tzelem Elokim. And the truth is that the work in the Garden of Eden was not to squash the Tzelem Elokim, but rather, what was it? It was to manifest the Tzelem Elokim. Because what does God do for 6 days? God creates. There's this creative aspect. So therefore, God then creates this beautiful Garden of Eden, hands the keys to Adam and Chava, and tells them, La'ovda u'lashomra. Now, continue guarding, right? La'ovda, working, which is interesting, La'ovda, working, basically continue what I've been doing. Therefore, man's being B'Tselem Elokim is that we should now continue to do what God was doing. We're partners with God in this. U'lashomra, certainly not to destroy what God gave us, but we're partners and to make it better, what God has given us. L'ovda l'shomra is actually a great deal of human dignity involved in it. So if here we have work with the opposite of human dignity. Here we have work trying to squash, trying to destroy the human dignity. So that's point one. But there was another point. Vayimaru at chayehim. There's something bitter coming on over here. And what types of work are we told? Kol avodah b'sadeh. All the works of the field. Now, perhaps we missed that. But avodah b'sadeh got introduced into Bereishit at which point? Even before then. Look at source number 8. Look at source number 8, correct? Ula Adam amar ki shamata lekol ishtecha v'tochal min ha'etz asher tzivitich lemor lo tochal mimenu arah ha'adama b'varecha u'be'itzvon tochlenu kol yimei chayecha v'kotz v'dardar tatzmiach lach v'yachalt et esef ased b'zat apecha tochal lechem ad shuvcha al adama ki menu lukachta ki avar ata v'ata v'elafar tashev. This connection of work with the sweat of the brow, which means this is a very different type of work. La'ovda u'lashomra was totally a work of, I would say, Tzelem Elokim is manifest. Over here, you know, it sounds like it's part of the punishment. The sales pitch that the Nachash put on is that if you eat this, you'll be like God. Well, guess what? Guess what God did for 6 days? God was working, so now you get to work in a much more hands-on way. And you know, Adam gets exactly what he wanted. You want to be like God? Great. Roll up your sleeves now and start working. But the work over here is a strenuous work. The work is a difficult work, the sweat of the brow and so on, which means the work which is taking place over here now is going to be much closer to what is taking place in Egypt. But of course, there's more elements in Egypt. Again, two stages in the Garden of Eden, pre-sin and post-sin. Pre-sin is dignified. Post-sin is much more intensive. But it's still, there's something positive about it. I mean, look, it's still a miracle. Yes? Miracle or no? You take something dead, you stick it in the ground, and it comes back to life. Yes? That's not a miracle? There's a miracle involved in it, which means the very idea of planting is literally, I'm saying not figuratively, literally a concept of tchiyat hametim. You take something which doesn't look like it's alive anymore, you had a fruit, you eat the fruit, you're left with the seed, garbage, you throw the garbage in the ground, and suddenly it comes back and it grows back again. So you say, okay, that's literally Tchiyat HaMetim. Adam is now told, you have, again, not no longer just Lo Vdalu Shamra, now this is other level. But again, I want to point out, but there is this pre-sin and post-sin. The pre-sin is going to be one of incredible dignity and really the continuation of God. But why do we need a message of Tchiyat HaMetim after the sin? Because now there's death in the world. Now you're going to die. Now you have to start planting. Now you need to know that there's going to be death, but there's going to be life again. Which means this whole idea of this reorientation to life takes place in this post-sin world, but still there is a dignity involved in this. There's still this partnership with God involved in it. And it's not an accident that Chazal considered Zra'im one of Emunah. Right? It's, I don't know if you're familiar with that. The Gemara says if you want to, it takes the six different parts of the Mishnah and divides them and says Zra'im, agriculture, that is, you want to know about Emunah, study Zra'im. And that's exactly as I gave you one example of it just now. But there's one other element that we perhaps missed, and that's in the continuation of Pasuk Yudalid back in the first source. So there's this bitterness, which means the bitterness, and I would go so far as to say, is that the bitterness, and maybe manifested by the maror that we eat when we celebrate or commemorate leaving Egypt, may also be connected to that first galut that took place when we had to start working the ground, the bitterness, and so on. Which means I see a direct line between exile from the Garden of Eden and the Egyptian exile, and the point of convergence between the two is within the maror itself. The bitterness of the maror goes back to that which is planted within this post-Garden of Eden life, and we have this bitterness over here as well, v'yimru atchayim. Again, when you ask, where does maror come from? Maror comes from this verse over here, but why should maror have to then manifest itself in vegetation? So the missing thing over here is Adam post sin in the Garden of Eden, but the other elements are interesting. And then, and by the way, isn't it true that every single one of us forgot that it said in this Pasuk, Avodat HaSadeh? And that all of us only focused on, oh, they're building the pyramids? Whether we built the pyramids or not is something else. But isn't it interesting that it's like, we've seen this verse dozens of times, collectively we've seen it 100 times, and not one of us, am I right? Now, one of us noticed that it talked about Avodat HaSadeh in this verse. I'm not touching that yet, but the door is open to suspect that maybe that when Adam is getting punished, maybe the punishment doesn't really come through all the way to this point. But let's leave that for the moment. By the way, are you following the theme yet, or still not convinced? Okay, we'll get there. You'll get convinced later, as I said. But the other point that you do remember, and that's the Chomer Ulevinim. Chomer Ulevinim, does that remind you of anything? Does Chomer Ulevinim was introduced at any point? Did we see that at any point? You already cheating? You already looking at the next sources? But come on. Do you want me to start? I could start putting fake sources in here just to... Which source? Source number 6. And you have the same words. You have the same words, which means how many construction projects have existed till this point in the Chumash? Construction. I mean, okay. So this, yeah. Okay. I know there are others. Good. So I just asked. So how many construction projects have there been? The main one is this one. And the same words are used. Although that construction project, right, Migdal Bavel, building the tower up to Bavel with the same words, that was not a good project. And that was also a project, again, comparison and contrast. That was a project where the people within it seemed to lose the human form as well. There was the collective was important, the edifice was important, but the human being was a lot less important. I mean, if you think about the two sins in Parshat Noach, one is a rebellion against nature, in a sense, yes, no? That brings about the flood is a rebellion against nature. And the other sin is a rebellion against humanity. And a rebellion, obviously, against God. But it comes down to this rebellion against humanity. I mean, no place is this as beautifully expresses the Midrash that says that if a brick fell, they all cried, but if a person fell, then... I mean, this was, in a sense, communism. It was, we all need to go together to build something big, we need to build this wonderful edifice, and the individuals along the way are not important. On the other hand, if you will, the generation leads up to the flood is the generation to the 60s, free love, free everything, and so on. So you have it's not even capitalism run amok, but it's personal freedoms run amok versus no personal freedoms whatsoever. So you see this contrast between the two. Over here, when we get to the Egyptian slavery, the Egyptians, they are rebelling against the Tzelem Elohim of the Jews, which means over here it's our needs take place over their needs. We don't recognize Yosef. We don't recognize God. We don't recognize the Jews. The Jews have been brought down compared to animals. So let's continue with that a little bit more. Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim lemiladot ha'ivriot ha'shem achad shifra v'shem achad pu'ah v'yomer b'yaldechem et ha'ivriot ra'itim et ha'avanim im benhu v'hamitun oto v'im bati v'chaya. Which also seems a little ominous. We have no need for the men's, but we can think of something, of some way we can put the girls to use. So there, by the way, that also does echo the pre-flood generation, where, right, they took any women that they want and so on, and therefore also seeing them completely, again, it's not the beautiful verse prior to the sin in the Garden of Eden. What was the beautiful verse? Al Kain Yazov Adam et Aviv Ve'imo, right? Ve'idbak Ve'ishto Ve'yula Basar Echad. That's a beautiful verse, one of equality, one of spirituality, one of love, and one of appreciation. By the way, that verse is completely, completely the opposite of what Adam says right afterwards. You know, it's the babe you gave me. Or, you don't mean the babe, it's the bimbo. It's this woman you gave me. Totally degrading her, and compare that to the beautiful verse that he said before, and therefore man should leave his parents, cling, if Adam in fact said it. There's an argument whether Adam said it or whether this is an editorial comment. But over here, but what happens then before Parsha Noah? Everybody takes whatever woman they wanted. Right? We studied that in the beginning of the year. Yes, we remember? Good. Over here, kill the men, let's keep the women. But they fear God. And that also comes over from someplace else. Who else are we told that feared God? Yosef. So Yosef, who is forgot, yes? Yosef fears God. Yosef doesn't sin with Eshet Potiphar. Yosef, with his brothers as well, this comes in, oh, I'm not going to punish all of you. I fear God. So what do you now see? Paro forgot Yosef, but there are other people who have not forgotten Yosef. Which means the ethics of Yosef are still around. And again, this is something which is remarkable because it means that these women are heroic. These women are willing to stand up against arguably the most powerful leader in the world at the time and say, no, this is unethical. We will not do what you are asking us to do. Of course, how do you play it? So they do it in a very clever way. You know, what's going on here? So instead of saying, you know, we fear God, which probably would not have been a good career move, but Tomarna Miladot El Paro, Kilo Kanashim Mitzriot Virot Ki Chayot Hena. So what did he call? What do they call them? Chayot Hena. Which means? What? They're animals. Which plays right into Paro's anti-Semitism. These aren't women who need to go to the hospital to give birth. They're not the ones who need. They're animals on the streets that can give birth, but they don't need anything. So you realize again the clever, cynical response that they give to Paro, because Paro was so anti-Semitical by this response. So this again, this dehumanizing of the Jews. At this point, we realize how complete it is, because now we see that Paro believes his own propaganda. V'yetev Elokim l'madot v'yirev ha'am v'yatsumu ma'od v'yiki yiru miladot Elokim v'yasnam batim v'yitzapra l'chol amo l'mor ki ha'ben ha'yilod ha'yar'oret ha'shlichu v'chol ha'bat t'chayun. Paro doesn't give up, and still he says, okay, we can't kill them right away, then at least later off throw them in the river, and we will still keep the girls alive. Okay, let's continue. sources 9, 10, and 11 were all about Yosef being Yirei Elokim, but I think that you, I think you already understood that point. Source number 14. Vayelech Ish, Mibet Levi, Vayikachet Bat Levi. What do you notice about this verse? The anonymity. It's as if whoever these people are, it's completely unimportant. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi vayikach et bat Levi. Does the word vayikach do anything for you? Or yes or no? I guess it depends if you learn Gemara in the beginning of Kedushin. What?
Kicha.
Which is very interesting that they learn kicha kicha misteyef from, and it's not learning kicha from over here. Over here, vayikach means actually a marriage. Vayikach et bat Levi. Vatara isha vatelid ben vatire oto kitovu vatitzpenei shlosha yirachim. Now, who is this young man? What? So who is this young man? Soon we're going to learn his name. Over here, and okay, we all know who it is, and this is Moshe. Now, there's a problem here. What's the problem? Moshe has some older siblings. Yes? Moshe has some older siblings, and his older siblings are... Yes? Aaron and Midian. Okay. So let's continue a little bit with our anonymous family, and then we'll make some observations as we continue. Vatari Shavatilet Ben and Kitov Hu, but it's potential Shah Yirachim. Keep in mind all those things which are bolded along the way here. Veloyachla od Hitzipenu, by the way, if he's, what day is Moshe born? Zayin Adar. 3 months later is Adar. One Adar. Adar. Which is a big argument with one or two. Adar, next. I don't want to even say what comes after Adar, because people get scared. After Adar, Nisan. From Adar to Nisan, from Nisan to Iyar, from Iyar to Sivan, which means that Moshe is revealed then on around the sixth day of Sivan. Okay, so if that means anything to you, then good. If not, then completely ignore that. So what does that remind you of course? That's Tevat Noach. And over here again, there's two Tevas. I'm sorry for pluralizing it in English. There are two Tevas or Tevot in the beginning of Bereshit, one in the beginning of Shemot, one in order to save the small part of humanity, and the other, of course, to introduce the Goel, he who will bring about the Geula from Mitzrayim completely, but again, I hope at least that you can't miss that comparison. So you have this de'a coming over here, this knowledge, lo yada, here it is, kein de'a, and she's there to know what would happen. So I want to again pause here in the middle and make this observation. In source 13, which I skipped, which means you probably looked at it, v'hadam yada et chava ishto. So again, you have this yada and yada over here. This is the yada in the biblical sense because it's the Bible. Excellent. V'tahar v'telid et kain v'toma kiniti ish et Hashem v'tosef v'ledet et achi v'tevel v'yhevel v'ratzon v'kain hu ovid adama v'yimiketz yamim v'yevoka. And I'm not going to read through the entire thing. He says something we know of Nuri. He says, "He kills him." What is your brother Hevel? Notice the word Yodea again. Lo Yodati. V'yada, right? We had it started. Adam Yodat Chavishto. What does he say? Lo Yodati. And then we have this terrible question, which is, "Hashomer Ochi Anochi." Am I my brother's keeper? By the way, what's the answer?
Yes.
The answer is yes, but he never gets this, and of course the result is going to be once again going into Galut, into wandering around. When we now start Shemot, we're going to realize this, a series of this situation taking place now, but the first thing I want you to notice is we have our first sibling situation, which is the older sister, and right? I'm sorry, because normally you only expect men to be in the story, but we have a sister over here. But we have siblings, and you have... How would Miriam answer this question?
Yes.
I'm my brother's keeper. Which means it's just so obvious, right? It's so obvious what her response to this is. Where Cain is saying cynically, Ashomer achi enochi, and Miriam understands that right away. Of course I have to see what he's doing. So over again, lo yadati, I don't know what happened to him, Ashomer achi enochi. And what do you have by Pasuk Dalet in Source 14? V'tzevachotom erachog l'deyam ayaselo. Why? Again, what words are missing there that now you know are supposed to be there? Which words? Right. And okay, so, right, yes? You see it? It's screaming at you here? Yes or no? Yes. V'tered bat paro, which is also interesting, because as bad as Paro is, and as bad as he thinks that the Jews, and he believes his own propaganda, he apparently can't convince his own family that that's the case. And she goes, "Vatiftak v'tir to yelid v'unarbo right bochev v'tachmul alav v'tor miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh." She understands exactly who it is, which is also echoes of Yosef Nar Ivri. "V'tomer achoto el bat paro," and she finds the mother finally to nurse him. Calls the mother. Beautiful pasuk is in pasuk tet. V'tomer la bat paro hilchi el yelid azev v'nikeu li v'ani atein etz scharech. Okay, please nurse your own son, and I'll pay you for it. I mean, that's something which is also unusual. Which by the way, that verse more than anything else in the beginning gives me hope. That somehow we can be in the worst situation, but somehow it just got turned around and said, go do the thing you want to do more than anything else in the world right now, and that's hold your young child in your arms and nurse him, and I'm going to pay you to nurse him, which again is completely counter to everything which is really bad happening till now. So again, I hope that you notice how much hope is in that pasuk. Vayigdal hayeled vativeyu labat paro v'yiro leven v'tekreshmo Moshe. Now, the other thing that probably happened along the way is that there was probably some kind of a discussion, and that we'll see in a second, about who Moshe really is. And I don't know to what age most of you, I don't know if you nursed, you didn't nurse, to what age you nursed, but if you knew that when you finish nursing, you have to give him back, so to what age are you going to nurse? Okay, now, don't answer that question. But maybe be on the longer end of the scale instead of the shorter end of the scale. So by the time Moshe is returned, I would assume that Moshe knows certain things. Moshe knows who he is. Moshe knows probably something about God. Again, just think about the educational challenge. What do you teach your son who you've convinced that you may never see again, but he's going to be in a position that it could be that God has some kind of plan over here, and there's something that you need to teach him about. Maybe I'll come back to that next week, this exact question and this exact point. But I think it's a very difficult question, but I think it's worthwhile thinking about. There is one level that we clearly see that she's successful when you read what happens immediately next. V'yigdal hayeled, v'tivei l'bat paro. So he's gotten older a little bit. V'yula levein, v'yikter k'shmo Moshe, and so on. V'yibam imahim, v'yigdal Moshe, v'yitzei el echav. So what has Moshe now, what does Moshe feel as well? What does he feel? It's also Hashomer Achi Anochi. He feels the situation of his brothers. Again, use the word brothers over here. These are not literally his brothers. So again, just think about the irony and the contrast. In the beginning of Bereishit, what happens? We have one brother killing another brother because he doesn't feel that he's his brother. And he doesn't feel that it's important that he's brother. And there's no sense of brotherhood. There's no sense of kinship. And there's no sense of responsibility. And initially, at least, there's no sense of guilt. That's the most scary part. Why, am I my brother's keeper? Exactly. That's why Bereishit... Oh, so maybe you were there last night. Okay. Yes, that's how we ended last. But then look what happens. Moshe goes out, Vayar b'sivlotam. Now, do you realize how easy it would have been for Moshe to see himself as an Egyptian? He grows up in the palace. He has, you know, the best education and the best everything. And he looks on these lowly slaves as being lowly slaves. The fact that he can walk out of the palace and see and feel the slavery of his most important word, of his brothers. Moshe senses brotherhood. And as I told you, I think a couple of times, the whole book of Bereishit is about brotherhood, But brotherhood that doesn't seem to work out. Do you realize how optimistic we can be right now? We're not that far. We have a sister who feels and acts upon this. I am my brother's keeper. We have Moshe who feels, I am my brother's keeper, as he walks out of the palace. As the scene then continues and plays itself out, who does Moshe see as his brother? It's not just his biological brother. Who is it? The entire Jewish people. I don't know, how do you say it? What's the dikduk? Are my brother or is my... The entire Jewish people... Yeah? How do you finish that? Are my brothers. These are my brothers. That's how Moshe feels. Which means Chaim could not feel that his own brother was his brother, and Moshe feels that the entire Jewish people are his brothers. So as I said, just the sense of optimism at this point. But isn't it interesting? We're reading the most depressing, you know, thing. We're being slaved and we're being tortured and whatever. But don't you see the light which is jumping off of the page over here? But it only happens when we compare it to things which happened at the beginning of Bereshit. And the next line is then significant. Vayifen kol v'chol v'yarki ein ish v'yachet ha-mitzri. Which means the beginning of Bereshit starts with the murder of a person kills his brother because there's no sense of brotherhood, and the beginning of Shemot acts with an act of killing where one man kills another man because he's been torturing and killing his brother. Which means it's such a similar action, but it's 180 degrees separated from one or the other. One is a senseless act of murder based upon jealousy. And the other is an action where what we can call a good Samaritan, but it's more than that. It's taking responsibility. It's seeing a terrorist on the street attacking your brother, but it's not literally your brother, but it doesn't make a difference. This is your people, and therefore Moshe really feels this is my brother. And that's what jumps out. And as I said, by the time you get to this point and you compare the Kain Vehevel action and the Moshe and the Mitzri action, it's the same exact story, except that all the details are different. And it's the difference which really makes it so important. Right. So, but that's what I want to wait for next week. Vayetzei b'yom ha'sheni v'hinei shnei anashim ivrim nitzim v'yom l'rasha lama tekerecha. But he sees something so sad. It's the Jews don't sense this. One Jew is hitting another Jew, which means Jews are acting like Cain and Hevel. And he says, why are you doing this? V'yom ha'misimcha l'ish sar v'shofet aleinu. By the way, that's also like Yosef. Who made you in charge? By the way, who made him in charge? Well, I happen to be in charge. Like, what is Har Higeni Ata Omer Kasher Harakta Et Mitzri? Are you going to do to us like we did to them? And again, Kafoy Tov, the total lack of appreciation. V'yira Moshe. V'yomor Chen Noda Devar. V'yira, he got scared. And I would say his being frightened over here is much more a function of seeing how much the Jews are not ready to leave. Which means we have this little piece of light, and the light is in this one family. The light is Miriam, and the light is Moshe, and we'll see soon the light is Aaron as well. But I want to go back a little bit to what it said when Moshe was born. Let's go back to the beginning of Source 14. Vayelech ish mibeit Levi v'yikachet bat Levi. Later on, in Source 18, it's going to tell us, Vayikach Amram et Yocheved dodato lo le'isha, Aharon v'et Moshe. Now, don't feel bad. Miriam's not here right now. This is a different genealogical list in order to lead up to the children of Aaron. But it tells us very clearly, the names are added in. This is the beginning of next week's parasha. Amram marries Yocheved, Dodato. Now, Dodato is a problem. Yes, why is Dodato a problem? Dodato is a problem. Why is Dodato a problem? Why is Dodato a problem? So if you look in the Chizkuni, in Source 16, V'yikach Amram et Yocheved Dodato, Ma shehiskim HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyatza Adam Gadol kimoshe milekuchim sha'atid lizaher aleihem. L'fi she'ein mamidim parnes al tzibur elam ken kupa shel shratzim tluyu lo b'tzavaro pen yitga'el al tzibur kamoshe matzino b'David. That's just a very, very interesting sentence. If you didn't understand it, I'll say it in somewhat of a different language. There are a number of illicit relationships in Bereshit. Virtually all of the illicit relationships in Bereshit all lead up to eventually to David HaMelech and to Mashiach. whether it's Lot and Lot's daughter, which then will produce Moav, which will then produce Rut, which then produce Yosef's great grandmother, whether it's Yehuda and Tamar, which is David on David's father's side. And what bothers Chazal is, why should Mashiach come from such relationships? And by the way, this is, being post-Christmas, one of the things the New Testament completely never understood and could not begin to understand, so much so that they had to make a virgin birth, which is, again, the exact opposite of what the Chumash really does say in terms of the genealogy of David HaMelech. So what it's saying over here is that that relationships, or those relationships which are illicit, which cause Yehuda leading to David, is the same kind of relationship which causes Moshe, and this is necessary that leaders should not think that they're special or and so on. And that's the way that Chazal, at least in this particular source, understand this phenomenon. Now, on the one hand, none of this should bother us, just like you saw in the very beginning of that sentence, because it's before Matan Torah. So, should it bother us, for example, that Yaakov marries two sisters? So, if you take the approach that Yaakov kept the entire Torah, you're going to have a hard time explaining how he married two sisters. If you're a Zionist, then you have an explanation, and that's why Rachel has to die as soon as you get to the land of Israel, because in the land of Israel, you have to keep the entire Torah, which is the approach which the Ramban is going to end up taking. Rashi, by the way, is not so much behind the Ramban on this. Is that outside of the land of Israel, the mitzvot are not as important. You get to the land of Israel, now you have to keep the mitzvot. But I hope that all of you are troubled by this. I mean, by this. And of course, the easiest solution is that the Avot did not necessarily keep the entire Torah. There is an interesting Maharal who claims that the Avot, that they kept the mitzvot, but they only kept mitzvot taseh, they didn't keep mitzvot lo taseh. He has a philosophical reason for this, and he claims that if you're not commanded to do something, you can do something, right? If you're not commanded to, you can do something, but if you're commanded not to do something, you don't do something, so what does it mean? If that helped you at all, right? If you command you something, you don't do it, so you did something positive. If you're not commanded, or you're commanded not to do something, or you're not commanded not to do something, you have a double negative. You're not commanded not to do something, you don't do anything, so what have you done? You haven't done anything, so what significance of this? I mean, but if you think about this is, I know this is a little strange, what takes more intention? A mitzvah taseh, a mitzvah lo taseh? So clearly, a mitzvah lo taseh takes more intention. Why? Because you have to be purposely not doing something, not that you just didn't do something. Yes? No? Good. Anyway, no? If I do a mitzvah taseh, I need to think, okay, I'm doing it. But the fact is, you're doing it. Right? If your husband brings you flowers for Shabbos, it make a big difference if he says, hini muchen mezumen l'chaim mitzvah taseh, to bring it, or he brings the flowers. Meaning, you did something positive at the end of the day. But if you don't do something negative, I need to have in mind I'm not doing this. If I didn't have in mind that I'm not doing it, I just didn't do it. Which means, what difference does it make by a mitzvah lo taseh? So that's why a mitzvah lo taseh requires more intention than a mitzvah taseh. Anyway, as I said, you could think about that when you find yourself with nothing else to think about. Okay, coming back to, I don't know, who do you want to kill right now? No, but that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. To fulfill a mitzvah lo taseh, you need intention that I'm not doing this because God commanded me not to do it. Not I'm just not doing it. But a mitzvah taseh doesn't take as much intention because you're doing it. Understood. Anyway. As I said, that's the Maharal solution regarding the Avot and the Mitzvot. They said, before Matan Torah, they didn't keep Mitzvot Lo Taseh, because it's absurd to keep a Mitzvot Lo Taseh, because, okay, you weren't commanded for it. So coming back to this point, Moshe's parents are married in Perek Vav. In Perek Vav, they happen to have another child. Later on, we're going to learn there's another child as well, who's Miriam. They have children who are older than Moshe, which were told to us very clearly. They have older children to Moshe. And nonetheless, when we looked at the source in Perek Dalid, what were we told? Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, source 14, v'yikach et bat Levi. So when we read that source, then vatari isha v'teled ben, and she goes and she has a kid. So what happened over here? So Chazal have some insight that I want to take a look at. Chazal say, look at source 22, vayikach, right? Vayikach, that we noted that word before. Vayachzor mi boyele. It should have said he returned his wife, right? And I hope you know the story. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zveida melamed she'asa lo ma'aseh lekuchen. He went and he did a proper wedding. Hoshiva bi'iparon, and he returned her with a canopy. Va'aron and Miriam mishorim lefaneha, and Aaron and Miriam, they serenaded them during their wedding. Right? Umalche asherit omrim eim habanim smecha. Right? That's the way the Gemara describes the re-wedding of Yocheved and of Amram. Look at source 23. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi vekachet bat Levi lehechon halach. Amar Yehuda bar Zvina shehalach ba'atzat bito. Tana. Amram gadol hadol haya. Amram, the father of this family, was one of the great leaders, very influential. Kevin Shurasha Amar Paro Kola ben Yiloda Yaora Tashlichu, once he saw that all the kids would be thrown into the river, Amar Lashavanu Amilim, why bring children into this world? Amad Vigirashat Ishto, and he divorced his wife. Amdu Kulam Vigirshu Nishotayim, and therefore everybody went and divorced their wives as well. Amrlo Bito. And now this did not make it into the Haggadah. In the Haggadah, we blame Lavan for being bad. Over here, she blames her father for being bad. Abba, kasha gezeretcha yoter mishel paro harasha. You're worse than paro. Shaparo lo gazar elah lezecharim, but ta gazar telezecharim elana kevot. Paro only wanted to get rid of the males. Because of you, there will be no males or females. Paro lo gazar elah bolam hazeh. Paro, it only affects this world, but the neshamot are going to go into the other world. Paro Risha, who suffix zeratom it kayem, it suffix ain mit kayem. Maybe he'll catch us, maybe he won't catch us. Vata tzadik vadeg zeratcham it kayem. And you, you're a tzadik, 100%, once you threw your wife out of the house, there will, or you left the house, there will be no more children. Shenemar, and so on. Vatik zeratom it kayem. Amad vichzerat ishto amdu kulam vichziru nishotayim. And therefore everybody went back and got married. But by the way, this whole scene of the marriage and the serenading, you have the same scene with Adam and Rishon. Yes, I don't know if you're familiar, almost the exact same scene. Source 26, Amar Ravon, Natakadosh Baruch, Kos Shel Bracha, Ubirchan, Amar Rav Yehuda Barabi Simon, Michael Vegavriel, Hema Yushosh Venim Shel Adam Rishon, Amar of Samilai, Matsin Shel Kadosh Baruch, Mavre Chatanim, Umakashatet Kalot, Umavaker Cholim, and so on. Now, over here, the exact same scene, instead of Miriam and Aaron, you have Michael and Gavriel, who are over there dancing and serenading Adam and Rishon when they're created. But I will point out something which I think is interesting in this whole thing. See, when Amram remarries his wife, well, look at source 24. Vatikach Miriam Hanivia, Achot Aaron et Hatof Biada, Achot Aaron velo Achot Moshe. Why is she called Miriam Hanivia Achot Aaron? Wasn't she Achot Moshe also? Omer Rav Amram, I mentioned in a class someplace else last week, that very often characters, biblical characters, are the same name as the rabbis who are teaching the thing. Over here, it's Rav Amram teaches this. And I think you can all agree with me, you've never seen a Rav Amram before in the Gemara. But Rav Amram is the one who teaches about Amram. Amar Rav Amram, Amar Rav, v'amar le, some say it's Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, melamed shehayta mitnab'a kishehi achot Aaron, v'amaret atid imi sheteled ben, shemoshia Yisrael, v'kevin shelad Moshe, nitmale kol habayit kulo or. The whole house filled up with light. Amar Aviu Nashka al Rosha, her father then kissed her. Amar Labitin et Kaimed Nuvoatech. You were right. V'kevin shetilu liar, but when he's thrown into the river, Amar Aviu itapcha al Rosha, he bopped her on the head. Amar Labitin hechen Nuvoatech. What happened? V'hainu dechiv atetzev achot merachok ladat maya aselo leda maya b'sof nuva. Okay, so we have a little bit more information about this, but I want to throw in a couple of more points. One. Amram is married, divorces, remarries his same wife. I think we're, and what else are we told? That when Moshe is born, the whole house fills up with light. Where are they getting that from? So go back one more time and look at source 14. Vatar isha vatelid ben vatirer oto kitov. Kitov. Does that phrase remind you of anything? Where is Kitov used for the very first time? Look at source 15. Vayomer Elokim yehi or vayehi or vayar Elokim et haor Kitov, which means this Kitov by Moshe is the same Kitov which is used. And again, that's already, I'm not saying that. That the Midrash is already alluding to in terms of the whole place fills up with light because it notices the Kitov as being virtually the same. Now, take a look, and again, to this to me is fascinating. One more time at source 18. Vayikach Abram et Yocheved Dodato. He married Yocheved Dodato. So Dodato means his aunt, and that's the trouble that Chazal have trying to figure out how he's allowed to marry your aunt. It's one of the Ariot, which you're not allowed to marry your own aunt. Now look at the Targum Yonatan in source 19 on how it translated that. Vayikach Abram et at source 19. Vayikach Abram et Yocheved Chavivato. What does Chavivato mean? His beloved. So how is it translating Dodato? It's translating like Shir Hashirim. Dodato. So what does that pasuk then mean? Amram married Yocheved, the woman that he loved. So why would I have to tell me that he married the woman that he loved? Don't I know? Because he married his ex-wife. Which means he's the one who went back and married the woman that he'd been married to earlier, and that's the hint in the Chumash about this whole thing about divorcing, that he married Dodato. He married the woman that he had been in love with. So I think that's the hint that Chazal have, that he went back and married his. No, at that point Aaron is mentioned, but Miriam is not mentioned in that one. Right, correct. At that point, right. But by the Yikach is not. Correct. One more thing, and then we'll finish up for today. We'll get finally to the easiest one. So what happens in source 27 when Moshe goes wandering off into the Moshe ro'e etzon yitron chotno kohen midyan v'yinehiget etzon achar midbar v'yivo el har ha'elokim choreva, which is also, I don't know if we missed that when we read it over here. Where is Moshe going to? He's going to Chorev. He's going to the mountain of God, which means it's really very deliberate over here. It's really stated in a very deliberate way. He sees the Malach Hashem, and he sees the snare. And I don't want to go. It's Admat Kodesh, who he's told in verse number 5. But finally, what happens in that scene? Go a little bit further to the following source, which is the second part of 27. Vayan Moshe v'yomer v'hini lo yaminu li v'lo yishmu b'koli komu lo nireh lach Hashem v'yomer lov Hashem ma zeh b'yadecha v'yomer mateh. Now, is a nachash mentioned any place in the beginning of Bereshit? But what's the difference? And by the way, you understand why somebody would be so frightened in nachash, because nachash is where all sin comes from, temptation and everything. And what does God say to Moshe? Put your hand down, and you can take this, and you can control this nachash. You can turn this nachash back into a stick. You can turn this nachash, which means, where are we standing right now? We're standing at Har Sinai. Har Sinai is called Admat Kodesh. This is the close. We've had Holy Land one other place, maybe, when Yaakov wakes up from his dream and he sees a ladder going up into heaven. But the only other place we had Holy Land till now was in Gan Eden, being kicked out of Gan Eden. We've lost this kind of holiness. So now we're standing, again, all these years have gone by, and all that I wanted to point out today is one small thing. That when we read Sefer Shemot as just the continuation, meaning if it were part of Bereshit, and this is the next story, we would totally miss it. When we read it as a separate book, okay, this is a new story. The Jews went to Egypt, let's read how the slavery is. I think we miss it. And when we start to understand the undercurrents of what are being taught over here, there are just so many elements. And again, if you want, you can accuse me and say, no, this is my imagination, it's perhaps my creativity, I'm seeing things which aren't there, but I'm not. Which means it's the Peru, and it's the Revu, and it's the building, and it's the Teva, and it's most importantly, the sense of the Tzelem Elokim versus being animals, where the reality is the Tzelem Elokim, and not only Tzelem Elokim, the Tzelem Elokim over here is actually, it is so highly developed, Tzelem Elokim over here, and we see sparks of it. We see sparks of it within Miriam, right? Initially, this question that rings out, Hashemar Achi Anochi. We see the two scenes over there, killing the brother, no sense of brotherhood. We see the sense of feeling brotherhood. We see the feeling brotherhood within Moshe. We see the feeling of brotherhood within Miriam. We finally see the Nachash. And the Nachash is this frightening thing, because that's where everything went wrong initially. And now God says, no, we're standing in front of Har Sinai now. We're standing, what is Har Sinai? Har Sinai, what is the Torah? Eitz Chaim, not Eitz Hadat Tovara. It's Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim hi l'machzikim ba. Eitz Chaim hi l'machzikim ba. If you're standing in front of Har Sinai, the rules are different. If you would have eaten first on the Eitz Chaim, it would have been completely different. Now put your hand down and pick up that thing and turn it right back into wood. Right? The Nachash can't touch you now because now you have the antidote. The antidote is the Eitz Chaim. And again, the world at this point is completely different. But my point is you can't possibly read this differently. And then finally, we'll just to seal it, we'll get to the last verse for today, and that's verse, that's source 28. Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe, when Moshe keeps pushing off and pushing off, Vayomer halo Arun achicha ha-Levi yadati ki taber yudaber hu v'gam hine hu yotzeler kratecha v'racha v'samach bilibo. When did we ever see in Bereshit two brothers seeing one another and happy about it? Over here, we have the sense of brotherhood by Aaron, we have the sense of brotherhood by Moshe, and we have the sense of brotherhood by Miriam. We have a different story over here. We have reason to be optimistic over here. We know that this book is going to end very differently than the other book did, because the other book begins with, again, Kafui Tov, but on the part of Adam. We began that book over there with man sinning and losing the Ovda Ula Shamra, and therefore became a very different type of bitterness comes in. And maybe that bitterness does somehow flow over to the bitter work which is going to be taking place over here. But it's just constantly looking at all, again, it's right there under the surface of every single thing that we've been reading today. It's all there. You can't read Shemot without being familiar with Bereshit, or I'll say further, you really can't understand what's going on in Shemot without understanding what's going on in Bereshit. But everything that we've seen in Shemot so far, even though this is not a happy story, we do realize that there are these sparks coming across which give us this absolute optimism that this is a different story. The sense of brotherhood, or maybe the rejection of the brother that we had to deal with throughout Bereshit, we finally have learned this lesson, and now we have people standing up and saying, no, we are one family. And again, most importantly is Moshe. It's not only his brother. So that Aaron feels love for his long-lost brother is one thing. That Miriam feels this responsibility and love for her younger brother, a lot of older sisters take responsibility for the younger brother. That Moshe feels the brotherhood for somebody who's not his brother, but he's part of his people. This is my brother. And he's willing, again, talk about bad career move, willing to lose his status in the palace in order to go and to save his brother. And I can say, hold on, murder is murder is murder. What Moshe did is the exact same thing as Cain, right? Except all of us know that that's not the case. Cain kills because of no sense of brotherhood. Moshe defends the life of a Jew because of sense of brotherhood. And now we know this is going to be a completely different book.